beginning of May of 2017 until the beginning of September, our milk production increased nearly 20 pounds per cow per day. Now, May till September is generally when cows go down in milk, right? Because of heat, stress, and other things like that. At the same time, we were also removing, if you remember, in 2017 is when RBST ended up being removed basically from the industry from, and so we were actually starting to take the herd off of that as well. And so even on a small herd of 120, 130 cows, our improved milk production was statistically significant.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Hi-D from DSM Firmenich optimizes vitamin D levels to increase milk yield, enhance calcium to phosphorus ratio, and strengthen immunity. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd. Lallemand Animal Nutrition, partnering in microbial solutions for a changing world. Unlike traditional vitamin D3, which requires metabolic conversion in the liver and kidneys before becoming bioavailable, 25-hydroxy-D3 bypasses the first step, allowing for faster absorption and improved efficiency. Hi-D from DSM Firmenich optimizes vitamin D levels to increase milk yield, enhance calcium to phosphorus ratio, and strengthen immunity. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
Good day and welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show. I'm Mark Thomas from Dairy Health and one of the hosts of the Dairy Podcast Show. And today, this morning, it's great to have for the New Year recording of the Dairy Podcast Show, Jill Nelson. Jill joins us from Minnesota, from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. And I guess the first question, welcome, will be asking about Sleepy Eye, but welcome, Jill.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity on your podcast.
And Jill, you're from Olmar Farms. Is that a family farm that you're part of, your family?
Yeah, I'm the fifth generation on our farm here in Minnesota.
So before we get started, is the Sleepy Eye have some historical background? Or is everyone in the town sleepy-eyed?
No, we're named after an Indian chief that had tired eyes, the lazy eyes or whatever you want to call it. And he was a really important chief back in the early years of Minnesota's existence.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's some cool history. So Jill, tell us a little bit about your background. The topic today is stray voltage, certainly a very important topic and one that probably doesn't get enough discussion or recognition in the industry overall from consultants, veterinarians, et cetera. So I guess first tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got to be where you are today, and then a little bit more about your interest in stray voltage.
Yeah, so like I said, I grew up on a dairy farm here in Minnesota, and I went to the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities campus. I have a degree in animal science from there. Spent a few years working at ABS Global, working with their international sales teams, and then I spent a while in doing nutrition and dairy consulting in the Dane County area of Wisconsin and the surrounding counties. So really big pocket of progressive large dairies that I worked with in that area. And then in 2002, my husband and I packed up the kids and moved back to the farm and began farming. At that point, we took over my dad's part of the partnership and farmed with my uncle until 2008, which is when we took over the farm in Hall.
I imagine that stray voltage, well, we talked a little bit beforehand, but is your interest in stray voltage came from the personal experience you had on the farm?
Yes, it did. We had stray voltage on our farm was found in 2008. We were noticing behavioral changes in the milking parlor that just weren't explained by any mechanical issue. And testing confirmed that we had it, and it was coming, in our case, it was coming from the primary side of the electrical service. 2010, we moved into a new facility, thinking that a new service to that barn, completely separate from our old farm, would take care of that issue. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. We had it in the brand new facility that was had an equipotential plane, everything up to code. Incidentally, all of the electrical experts that came out, nobody was really ever able to identify any on-farm problems for us. And so that kind of started this whole journey for us.
Jill, for some of our listeners, and I can't claim to be an expert, although I have some experience in this area, especially from older facilities in northern New York and some new facilities also. But can you explain a little bit about on-farm versus off-farm or primary versus secondary? Because I think that's really interesting. You know, a new facility, which you're putting in grounding and so forth to prevent these type issues, especially on waters, et cetera, in the parlor, and that still didn't work. So can you explain a little bit about the physics of electricity and why that doesn't work?
Well, I'm not an expert in electricity, but I can give you a layman's explanation. So on-farm issues can be anything from motors that are going out to poor connections and whatnot. And those issues, when they're found, are generally pretty easy to correct. Most electricians now have a much better understanding of you know, looking for that and finding those things and correcting them. You know, for wiring the farm is important. And again, like I said, most electricians are now up to speed on how to update older facilities to make them clean, give a clean energy there. The primary side, in our case, what happened is, so electricity comes to your farm, you use it, and then it returns on the neutral line. If that neutral line is somehow doesn't have the capacity to hold, to take all of that current back, then that current goes into the ground. And that ground, in theory, then is going to, the electricity is going to flow back to the substation through the ground. But the reality is it'll take the path of least resistance. And in our case, it was right back into the barn. And so this is revolving current going into your barn. An equipotential plane in a barn acts as a capacitor. So it actually is holding that that electrical potential in that equipotential plane. And so whenever a cow touches a surface, that's not exactly the same potential as what she's standing on, which we know there cannot be a perfect potential across, you know, a barn, she'll get a discharge shock. So it'd be similar to if you are shuffling your feet on the carpet and then you touch your buddy and you give him a shock. That's the same type of shock that the cows are get. It's a capacitance shock.
At least from what the researcher has shown, those type shocks have a far greater effect on a bovine as would be compared to a human, correct? In terms of effects, negative effects on milk production, et cetera.
Right. Well, cows have a much higher, people have a higher resistance level. And so what we can't feel, a cow can feel at a much lower level.
Can you tell us a little bit about this, the process, if you will? So can we start with testing, you know, who do you recommend in general is doing that testing? Obviously, someone who has the correct equipment and so forth. But do you have any tips there or recommendations or not to do? You know, I know in my experience, some initial testing didn't find what some more advanced testing found. Can you give some recommendations there?
Yeah, I guess in my recommendations and trying to find somebody who's an expert in stray voltage is look at the type of equipment they're using. If they're coming out with witching wands, don't let them on your farm because that's a very common thing for people to come out and do. If they have just very simple equipment, they may be able to find the stray voltage, but they may not be able to fully identify the source to the extent. And certainly they're not able to record. And it's important to be able to record motor starts and the milliseconds of what your electrical pulses are on your farm. And I guess the rule of thumb is you get what you pay for, and the equipment that the top electrical experts have is incredibly expensive. And so what they're going to charge is going to be quite a bit more than some that don't have the right equipment, at least not the right equipment to do the recordings that you want to have. I should say, generally what happens when you feel you have stray voltage on your farm, you talk to your power supplier. And they will bring out their experts, and they are going to measure they're going to do some testing on the farm for a few days, and they're going to record. And unfortunately, the meters that are used by most of those electrical experts coming from the utility side are actually designed with the 500 ohm resistor, which we'll talk about in a minute. And they'll also will be averaging 5 to 10 to 15 seconds worth of time in their graphing. And so when they show you the graph, if you average that length of a time, it's going to take out all of the bumps, all of the motor starts, all of the spikes in what is actually happening on your farm. So in our case, they came out to our farm many times and tested, and every time showed us this nice level line where the cow contact is and said, see, you don't have it. And that's kind of the big problem that we're facing in our industry.
Okay, so you're saying that 15-second period is averaged versus you're seeing the whole 15 seconds. So if you were to actually look at the graph, you'd see some spikes. But if you average that without a graph, you may not catch those spikes. Okay, hey, you know, that makes perfect sense. When you graph pulsators, you generally take a 15-second graph. Reading. If you only look at the numbers and you don't print the graph, you often miss things because the numbers are okay, but the graph will show you some variation. So another dairy example of print the graph also. So the resistor. I recall doing some simple testing with a meter and the resistor and a metal plate the size of a cow's foot, etc. You know, really basic, looking for some things, which interestingly you often find with motors, etc. But tell us about the importance of using that resistor in the 500 ohm resistor in the line.
Well, I guess what I'm going to tell you is a 500 ohm resistor has never, ever, ever in science and research been proven to be the correct resistance to use for testing. The studies that are done all the way back into the 1970s, they all show a much lower resistor would be more appropriate to be used. If you look at research done by Richard Norell in 1983, his study then showed 244 was the bottom of the range that he published, but in his footnote said that 10% of the cows were below 244. In 2020, he redid some resistor testing in Idaho, and that resistance showed that the lowest cow in his study then was 141 ohms. In the field testing that's been done by Concept Electric, who we worked with, he's done over 800 cows, and that was probably 5 years ago. He's done quite a bit more since, but the range on that those 800 cows was 109 to 395. And so 40 or 50 years, our industry has been, the utility industry has been pushing this 500 ohm resistor. When the people who are pushing that and the scientists that are pushing that are questioned under oath, they all acknowledge that that's not the worst case scenario on a cow's resistance, and that in fact it is quite a bit lower. And so right now what we're really pushing for is the use of 125 ohm resistor. We feel that that's going to catch the vast majority of a herd. Because if you use anything higher than that, you're basically saying that it's okay for 10 or 20% of my herd to be affected by stray voltage. And we'll talk a little bit more about how stray voltage at any level is no different than having a little bit of cancer. It's no matter how low the level of stray voltage is on a farm, it will affect at least a percentage of the cows. And in our current dairy economic state, we certainly can't allow even 1 or 5% of a herd to be affected by this.
That's very interesting and really important, obviously, because if your test isn't correct, then you're not going to have the results that you are obviously looking for or expecting. I guess within that, based on your knowledge and research, et cetera, are there different levels that tend to affect different functions of the cow, for instance? Before we connected, I mentioned to Jill that, you know, oftentimes stray voltage is a scapegoat for management. And she challenged me on that. And I think we came to an agreement that not saying it doesn't exist, but saying if there's obvious management issues in, say, milking procedure that are leading to high somatic cell count, we can't forget those also. But in your experience or based on your knowledge of the literature, are there different levels that cause, for instance, higher somatic cell count, lower milk production, fertility issues, or is it kind of just a black box, if you will, of negative effects?
I would say it's more than like a black box of negative effects. What I in our herd is it seemed like cows, you know, you go back to what the energy needs of a cow is. First is to maintain her body. She's got to grow. She's got to maintain her immune function. She's got to reproduce and she's got to produce milk. And what I found is that some cows we just could never get bred, you know, 8-10 times breeding them and out the door they would go. Other cows, repro was fine, health seemed to be fine, but, you know, we couldn't get, you know, them to peak or produce very well. So it just seemed like every cow was a little different on what they allowed, what their body allowed to let go, you know. And then in too many cases, it was the immune function that eventually went haywire in the cows, and no matter the treatments that we did, simple little cases of mastitis or infections would take the cow out completely. And I should comment too, because we did talk about this, you know, it is oftentimes thought about as a poor manager's excuse. So just to give you an idea, on our farm, we built a barn with cow comfort in mind, and most people who've been to our barn have commented that it probably is the best barn they've ever been in for cow comfort. And so we had cow comfort. Our feed was tested many, many times, and we were fortunate. I'm friends with Dr. Tom Olberg, so we had him to our farm on several occasions. Just making sure, are we mixing right? Is our mixer working? Are we feeding right? Is what we're feeding, you know, within the standard of what the ration shows? And we were doing really well on that aspect. We brought in Dr. Reed to do milking analysis on the farm. Again, had a good report from him. Dr. Gary Neibauer was at our farm and just did a walkthrough and tried to find areas that he would pinpoint to explain some of our issues. And again, really had nothing that he could point out to us. So there, and we're seeing this more and more frequently, that these new facilities, these really well-managed farms, are having serious impact. And in our case, our level that we had was quite low for most of the time. But it just, that, like I said, it's kind of like a cancer. When you see somebody who gets cancer that you know lives an incredibly healthy lifestyle, and they have cancer, I mean, and if you don't take care of that cancer, he's going to die, no matter how good of a lifestyle he lives, right? And a little bit of cancer is eventually going to kill you. Now, a really well-managed farm, it might take longer for that to happen than maybe, you know, a herd that has more obvious issues to correct first. But in the end, any amount of stray voltage is not okay on a farm.
I think that's a potentially a good example that with excellent management, you may cover up stray voltage or the effects of stray voltage, as opposed to average management or poor management, which then gets difficult to sort things out. But, you know, more of an effect. But then most consultants are probably going to point to the obvious versus the stray voltage, right? You know, so I guess if it's cheap to test for it, always test for it to make sure you don't have it, or and with some frequency also. And I say with some frequency, I recall some herds where the neighbor built a house or they installed some other electrical service on the line, and then that caused some change. And, you know, exactly how you explained, everything was fine until they put in that shop or they put in the neighbor's house down the road, and now something changed. So I think that's it's dynamic, right? You can't say we checked 3 years ago and everything's fine. You probably need to stay on top of that. So Jill, you mentioned something interesting. One thing that you and your family were thinking on the dairy was that when the stray voltage was fixed, maybe you could tell us, you know, how you fixed that, but the expectation was improved dry matter intake, which you didn't see, but you saw an improvement in milk production. So improvement in efficiency. We chatted a little bit about that, but I guess how you fixed it, and then, you know, what you saw and in what time frame you saw those things, you know, immediate, months, weeks, what have you.
Yeah. So like I said, we found the stray voltage in 2008. We finally found an expert in 2016 who could help us get the utility company to make the corrections that needed to be made. Because, like I said, utilities like to deny that it's even a problem, and the level that they say it's a problem at is significantly higher than what is the reality. And so for 8 years, we tried, you know, you can't fix a problem that somebody else is causing and unwilling to acknowledge. So finally in 2016, the ball started rolling and getting it fixed. May of 2017 is when we were fully, we ran three phase electric to the farm. We installed an isolated transformer over 100 yards away from any of our buildings. And then we also have a monitor on our line, so we can see right away if there's a fault somewhere going on. But so May, from beginning of May of 2017 until the beginning of September, our milk production increased nearly 20 pounds per cow per day. Now, May till September is generally when cows go down in milk, right? Because of heat, stress, and other things like that. At the same time, we were also removing, if you remember, in 2017 is when RBST ended up being removed basically from the industry. And so we were actually starting to take the herd off of that as well. And so even on a small herd of 120, 130 cows, our improved milk production was statistically significant. That being said, what we know happens with cows is that their immune system is affected immensely. And so really it was only until we removed or replaced the entire herd of cows that we've really fully feel that we're past this nightmare. Currently, we've got a 30,000 pound rolling herd average on twice a day milking. So I'm really happy with how the cows are doing. We have an incredibly young herd because, like I said, we had to basically replace every cow on the farm to get to the point of feeling we were finally past this.
Kind of through that.
Yeah.
What effects did you see on milk quality, somatic cell count? Was that significant also? Certainly that milk production is huge.
You know, oddly enough, our somatic cell count, you know, some farms, that is where their biggest problem is. For us, that wasn't our biggest problem. So we would, you know, we would get over 200 to 300, you know, fairly frequently. We dumped a lot of milk, though, and we treated a lot of cows. You know, I used to buy a pail of mastitis treatments almost every month. And now if I buy one every 6 months is about it, to treat mastitis. So, our cell count, if you looked at our bulk tank cell count, you wouldn't notice huge differences or that really high end. But like I said, we treated extremely heavy. We were doing everything in our power to save every cow that we could, because we knew a little case of mastitis could be the end of that cow. The other thing that we noticed, and that the one thing that really kind of was hard for me to understand at the time, and I understand now, is just muscle weakness in the cows. Cows had tremendous amount of muscle loss because of stray voltage. And so I would watch a cow, she'd slip and fall and not do the splits, just, you know, fall down. And more often than not, that cow could never get up. And it was this crazy thing to watch. But now when I saw the research on how it affects the immune system and the various inflammation markers in the blood, it's pretty obvious that that was what was also causing that muscle weakness that we watched.
No, that's really interesting, Jill. And I'd say an underdiagnosed cause of issues in the dairy industry, and something that obviously we know exists and is multifactorial, right? You know, we can't forget the management things. And again, I think that's where maybe some of the lack of diagnosis, if you will, of this problem comes into play, that it's not one specific area, just repro, just production, just health, which makes it obviously more difficult, you know, almost akin to mycotoxins. And then if you add in things like mycotoxins along with stray voltage, you know, what are the effects, et cetera. So
I think if you're a farmer and you're not sure if it's this or something else, cow behavior is, you know, that in itself, I don't know of any other reason, any other cause that would make a cow drink the way we notice them drinking, kicking in the parlor, jumping across the threshold. I mean, cow behavior, they can talk to us and they can tell us an awful lot about what they're feeling. And yeah, all of the other things can be, you know, something else, but cow behavior is, you know, where we first noticed it, and we saw that all the way through until it was corrected.
Our Yeast 40 is a natural biotechnology from ICC,
designed to boost the health and productivity of animals under challenging production systems. Our Yeast 40 performance is supported by an unique processing technology that results in a pure product containing high levels of beta-glucans, MOS, and yeast metabolites. These factors combined promote the ruminal and intestinal modulation, helping the animals to reach their full potential. Evonik is committed to help supply a growing world population with healthy and affordable animal protein while prioritizing animal welfare, the efficient use of natural resources, and food safety. Evonik's expertise in low-protein diets and supplemental amino acids help ruminant farmers around the globe to enhance feed efficiency, reduce costs, improve animal health, and lower greenhouse gas and nitrogen emissions.
So, Jill, based on your experience, what is your role? Are you helping other farms in this process, consulting at all, or are you just bringing this issue, if you will, to the industry? What is your day to day? You're a dairy farmer, what do you do with Stray Voltage specifically?
After we went through what we went through and we saw those results that we had once it was fixed, we did end up going into some litigation and went to court. And that's where we heard all of the research and all of the falsified research. And that's what really got my interest, because the experts all know that cows react at a much lower level than what the utilities say, and what so many of our electrical codes or public utility commissions, they all set various standards, and they say that as long as the voltage on the farm isn't above 1 volt or a half a volt, depending on where you're at, then the utility companies don't have to do anything to fix that. And what we found in the research was that those numbers are so far off of what the real research shows. But that never leaves a courtroom. People, that get a resolution either through court or through settlement or whatever, they just kind of go on their way, and they don't want to talk about it because it's hard to talk about. And it's an issue that so many people know so little about, and what they do know is what we've been told. We've been gaslit for 30 years on this issue. And so I just felt that it was important that we, that our story was told. And once our story was told in a local dairy newspaper, I started getting phone calls from all over the country of people that have been going through this or are going through this. And so I kept telling them, this is what the research says. And I just felt like I was a repeating record. So I developed a website where I put all of the research out there, depositions, court testimonies, expert testimonies on all these different issues. And that the website is strayvoltagefacts.com. And so I felt that I just needed to help other farmers, because it's a very lonely, lonely place to be.
So I did check out your website in advance. You have, I think, a great resource of for industry experts, dairy farmers, et cetera, going through the symptoms, resources, a bit of the discussion of resistance, et cetera, and other links, obviously. So it seems like a great resource for folks. And that's something that you continue to update and manage then?
Yeah, and we're just, as we get more information and more research, or I have time to look at some of the old stuff more, I add to that. And we're also trying to work with legislators and utility commissions to change the testing parameters, and to oftentimes the farmer is led to believe that a 500 ohm resistor is part of law, and that the 1 volt is part of law, and those are not the case. Most utility companies, when you actually dig into what they're supposed to do in their testing, their testing or their protocols actually show that if the testing doesn't show a level of what they can say the level of concern, the farmer still has concerns that they have to continue to look into that. And so rarely is that done. Most of the time they just go away. Many times they'll tell a farmer, like in our case, you don't have stray voltage, but if you want, we'll install an isolated isolator or a blocker. And incidentally, blockers, this is per the Dairyland, the people who developed the Dairyland blocker have said in court that their blocker has never been intended to be used as a fix to stray voltage, but yet that is how it is placed on farms as the fix. And so many farmers who have a blocker on their farm say, well, yeah, we fixed it because we have a blocker. Well, we had a blocker the entire time. We had one put in 2008, and then we had one on our new barn in 2010, and we still had all these problems. So those blockers were only intended to be used to reduce the problem on the farm long enough for the utility company to fix the cause of that stray voltage problem.
And certainly in the website, there's some information there for testing exactly what meter is recommended. You talk about the ohm resistor, et cetera. So, and that's very useful to have some guidelines because I would imagine it, some of these guidelines are not easy to find, if you will, correct? Especially, this is the first I'm hearing about the issue or concern with using a 500 ohm resistor.
Right. Back in the early 1990s, there was a book a white paper published called the Red Book. And it was published by the USDA, but it was put together by a group of scientists. Some were engineers, some were dairy scientists to discuss this. And that is where the 500 ohm resistor came out of. And many of the authors of that book at the time did not agree with that level being that resistor being used, but it's still at that time. And since that time, that's when some of these that even supported 500 ohms, when you get them under oath, they backtrack on that. So when we had stray voltage, our rural electric company came out with this nice little handbook of stray voltage in dairy farms that was put together by a group of well-meaning people in Minnesota to, address stray voltage. And again, it had in there that 1 volt and 500 ohm resistor, which both of those science say are not the right numbers to be used. Our book was based on the Iowa book. The Iowa book was based on the Wisconsin protocols. The Wisconsin protocols were based on the Red Book. So it's been this nationwide, even Canada, I've had calls from Canada that this is just something that needs to be changed, and it needs to happen throughout the U.S.
Well, Jill, thank you, because really it seems like your role as an advocate for the industry in terms of stray voltage, someone who has gathered the literature, the research, again, because you have to be careful. You said the well witches, if you will, or using validated techniques, if you will. There's a lot of stuff out there, people trying to sell products or sell services. So just bringing all this information together, objectively, the research and sorting through a lot of that. So thank you for that. So obviously, Jill, for our listeners, your website, again, strayvoltagefacts.com, is, I assume, a great way to contact you if people have questions or looking for other information. I really thank you for your time today. Excellent topic, often overlooked topic, underdiagnosed, if you will. But you know, thanks for your time, and also great to hear that your herd is performing so well since not only the addressing the stray voltage issues, but also the new construction, and I'm assuming lots of management and details that go into managing that herd average on a daily basis.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergen Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Elevate animal performance with Bergen Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your trusted ally in excellence. Their high-quality feed ingredients like coated nutrients and fat powders provide ruminants with extra energy, boosting health, productivity, and cost efficiency. Unleash your herd's potential with Bergen Schmidt.
So stay warm in Minnesota, because you know it's a lot colder there than Torreon, Mexico, where I am. And it was a pleasure to visit with you today. I guess we'll wrap up with some of the questions that we often ask on the Dairy Podcast Show. I guess the first would be, is there a go-to resource for you in terms of the dairy industry? And that can be a journal, a book, or website. Obviously, you've done a lot of research in this area. So maybe tell us a little bit about the resources you use to get the information you need.
I've always tried to surround myself with people that I feel are experts and know a lot. I read a lot of, you know, the dairy magazines, but I feel like if I have a real question about something, I'm going to go to my nutritionist. If he doesn't have the answer, I know that he's got people in his back pocket to contact. I know a lot of people in the industry just from my previous jobs, so I've been very fortunate to have access to some of the brightest minds in our industry whenever I've had an issue. And so those are the people I really go to. My brother happens to be a vet, so he's always a great resource for me as well.
I would agree. Oftentimes I say, maybe I'm not very smart, but I surround myself with smart people. And on the same token, not work-related, anything recently that you've watched or read of non-dairy interest, but maybe has some relevance to what you do day-to-day? You know, the relaxing side, if you have any time to relax.
Yeah, well, I guess the one resource I kind of go to in my life is the Bible, and it's been that's been a journey through all of this. And what I find fascinating about actually reading through the Bible is just all those stories that you hear when you were a kid make so much more sense when you actually read everything in context and read through the Bible, not just the little snippets that you get in church or Sunday school. So that's been really a guiding point in my life and a great resource.
So actually reading, not just a passage or two, which is a tidbit of information, but understanding the whole context of a chapter. No, that's excellent. And then I guess in being a dairy producer yourself, what would you say sets apart the excellent dairy producers from maybe the not so excellent dairy producers?
I would say that would be acknowledging that you don't have all the answers and being willing to ask for help. And I see so many people with just so much pride that they can't kind of see past themselves. And I've always kind of tried to always find a better way of doing things. And I clearly can't do that myself. And so you have to, I feel that dairy producers that I've seen that are the most successful are the ones that are willing to reach out and to learn and to get opinions. And, you know, sometimes you don't like the what they tell you, but if you're not challenged, then you're not going to be challenging yourself to do better.
That's a great response, Jill. And I think, you know, whatever you do, if you're a veterinarian, nutritionist, doctor, nurse, lawyer, what have you, right? Your network of contacts, colleagues who both professionally and probably personally challenge you, but also that, you know, to learn, think outside of the box, et cetera, and be open to make those changes. So I would agree thoroughly. I know I can't do what I do alone. It's the team that we have that makes that possible.
Right. Yep.
So Jill, again, thanks so much for your time today. Probably it's not all so bad to be inside recording a podcast today while the others are out working, but you have a good excuse to be inside the house. Look forward to perhaps meeting you at some professional meeting or other conference, et cetera.
Yeah, I would look forward to that. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Podcast Show, and thanks to all our sponsors for making this possible.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.